Welcome to The Educated Investor, brought to you by the Householder Group Estate and Retirement Planning. At Cishon Financial, Regional Vice President David Cishon takes a proactive approach to helping you develop a strategy to address your financial goals and objectives using the most efficient methods available. Now, here's your host, Scott Whatley and David Cishon.
Welcome to The Educated Investor. Again, my name is Scott Whatley, and we are glad you are starting your week off once again with us. It is always good to have David Cishon with us. David, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing fine, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Well, again, David is with us each week, and we just talk about all the things that we can and try to give our listening audience some things to think about, some education side. As David says, education is that great equalizer. And today is something that, none of us want to think about, but, when it comes that time and someone passes, dividing the property, and, David, I love your term, or family Armageddon. So, man, what have you, even some stories maybe you might want to share, one or two of the ones that went right and the ones that didn't have everything, all done up, was bad.
I'll give you a couple of quick examples, and then we can talk about some more specifics. But, and these are all recent. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, we had a couple of clients pass on the last month. And of course, when you do the right planning and you got things in order, it's a different story than the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you an example, the wife and daughter came in, and of course they're very upset. They lost their husband and dad unexpectedly, and they were literally a mess in the office, very upset. And they sat down and they said, "Well, what do we have to do?" And I said, "Well, Doris, you don't have to do anything. Everything's in order. Everything's is all set. The attorneys are aware. Financially, there's no concern.
Wow.
Your income is going to stay the same. The reduction in the Social Security is going to be covered by XYZ that we have off to the side. And the trust document has been reviewed, and all you have to do, Doris, is read the trust document, talk to the attorney, and everything will flow. There's no rush, no hurry, nothing has to be done."
Man.
And you could just see. Now, she knew this before, but everybody forgets these things.
Well, sure.
And her daughter, you could just see the relief across their face, like they couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, "Are you sure?"
Right.
I said, "Yes, sir. Everything is set. Not a problem." And of course, they did have a family trust. And it wasn't they had the family trust not because they had a lot of money, okay? They had the family trust so that when something like this happens, the next day is a non-legal event.
Man, that's
a great
way to put
it. They don't have to rush to court. They don't try to call this and call that and do all these kinds of things. But it was set in place. Now, the opposite happens. My partner, who's an estate planning attorney, has been in court with two family members that have been fighting over the most nonsensical things that the parents left. And these were items. This wasn't cash or money. But these were items that they considered of some value to themselves. I don't know if I should say great value, but they're so adamant in fighting this out. It has been 2 years. In 2 years, in 12 court appearances, apparently, from what I'm told, and the estate, which is less than $500,000, is now less than $250,000 because of legal fees on both sides.
Man, that's horrible.
For an item that you and I probably wouldn't pay a couple hundred bucks for. I mean, Those are rare stories, but they're true stories. The most recent one here, where they didn't have anything in place, the documents weren't in place. So in order to move assets, so long as it's a certain value, you got to go to probate court. And the guy had a will, but nothing in the will stated things. He didn't have any separate letters written where these assets are going to go or how they should be broken up. And we'll talk a little bit about how that can be done. But it is just a detriment, not only emotionally,
sure,
but financially to the remaining beneficiaries. It's such a shame these things have to happen. And it's at a time where emotions can run very, very deep. And this is why the best thing to do is state whatever you want to be done with certain things, assets, transfers, so forth and so on. And then normally, if it's done the right way, it's a relatively smooth road to hoe.
Wow. And what a difference of just, I mean, while having a horrible conversation that's sad, and boy, I know you feel bad for them as well, but yet then what a turnaround to be able to have a good, confident conversation with them, and as you said, to take all of that off of them.
Yeah, it is really very, very, it makes you feel really good to be able to turn around and say to them, you don't have to worry. Everything is set. Everything's in order. You're in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the next steps. Really simple. Don't worry about anything legally going forward.
Right.
And just that feeling alone puts those people in a different frame of mind. And that's the way it should be for everybody. You see, everybody can do this.
Sure.
But so many people don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not a matter of whether you have a trust or a will or something. The problem is people don't pay attention because there's always tomorrow.
Right.
We'll look at it tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll call for a checkup tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, tomorrow changes because something happens today.
Yeah, no doubt. Once again, you're listening to the Educated Investor. David C. Shawn is our guest each week. 720-482-1917 is the number. And David, like you said, and again, you know, you would know better than I, but I would imagine most of the things and that people do argue over or the most upset about are, like you said, the almost worthless things in real. But like you, emotion plays a big key, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, especially when the kids or the beneficiaries say, well, Dad said I could have this. And the other guy said, what do you mean, Dad? Dad said I could have this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it starts. This emotional value, more than monetary value, when a loved one is gone, causes a lot of riff and a lot of aggravation. And so in there starts the big fighting and the evolutionary process that thick people let their minds wander and start saying things to each other that doesn't help resolve it. It just hinders it more and more and more.
Sure.
You know, we want to let people know that we're not going to be taken by what they said, so we're going to end up insulting, and then it ends up legally, and then it's just a mess. And all of these things can be avoided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's solutions if people want to do them, you know, that we see work a lot for a lot of folks. For example, even if they have a will, they'll have a letter or a piece of paper attached to it that says, you know, these are the specific items, that picture on the wall, so forth. So this is going to Sarah, and then this thing over here is going to Joe. And you list them, okay? Not difficult, real easy. As a matter of fact, most attorneys, when they do the will or even a trust, right, they'll tell them. There's either a section in the back or something. Here, use this piece of paper and put in what you want, who the beneficiaries are of these individual items that don't have great value except for sentimental values, and just state them. And it makes life easier. Stating them like that, I guess they call it, it's not a force of law, but most likely people follow those wishes that are listed. And it works really well when there's relatively few items of any great importance. There's other solutions that can come into play that maybe aren't as good or as personable, but sometimes the wills, if someone has a will, will direct the executor to distribute them equally.
Right.
Now, and that's good, but it's kind of vague.
Sure.
You know, what does that mean? And siblings, of course, can get involved in discussions about that. But we've even seen it where, in fact, my partner has an elk head in his office, and he's had it in his office for 9.5 months because they can't reach agreement as to which one of the two kids are going to get it.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, you know, and of course, causes problems. Now, another solution that we've seen people use is appraisers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go to the American Society of Appraisers, and they'll come in, and they'll look at all these different things. And from dollars and cents, you know, material value, all right, they'll put dollars and cents on every item that you want.
Right.
It won't account for sentimental value, unfortunately.
Sure.
But we've seen the appraisers do that, and at least it settles the dollar amounts. The other thing we've seen in wills, and I know you have an excellent attorney that deals in this stuff, and he'll tell you, too, that that the executor is told to sell everything,
mm-hmm.
all personal stuff, whatever you get,
right.
And then they just split the dollars up. But again, you can have people that want to contest those things, those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've seen that was kind of interesting was a lottery process. When the kids were just adamant, or the beneficiaries, it might be kids, but adamant, and they would draw numbers or straws. Yeah, and then they'd pick them out of the hat, literally, and whoever wins gets the first pick. And then the next round, the one that lost gets the next pick. I mean, this is like, you know, is this really necessary? And unfortunately, I've seen just about everything.
Right.
Even from the standpoint where there's just, let's say, two beneficiaries or two children, let's just say, they flip a coin. They flip a coin who has the first thing, you know.
Oh, man. Next thing you know, it'll be that rock, paper, scissors game, you know, where you slap your hands on the palm of your hand. Yeah. Jeez.
But you know, what's interesting, even about that simple thing of flipping the coin, the first one gets to select first, and that first one can use his sentimental value to pick that item that he wants. And then the loser, the next, maybe he couldn't get that one, but he can get the next one that's, you know, has the sentimental value that why he wants to pick it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some advantages to that kind of an approach, depending on the number of people.
Exactly. Now let me ask you this. Let's say somebody has all their documents, you know, from you, and all of a sudden, but then all of a sudden one kid pulls out a piece of paper that mom or dad signed and wrote something else, and it's not notarized anything. It's just a handwritten note and signed. So my first question would be, what would happen with that? And does it change thing if something is notarized on just some other separate piece of paper?
Well, of course, it all depends on the timing.
Yep.
What's the date? You know, number one is that, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I really
understand.
Would defer to my or defer to your guy. But the fact being that anything, these letters or notes can support the decedent's wishes, but like I said, they could not have the weight of law behind them if someone wants to contest them. That's what's hard to for me to say.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know if it's a, if it's if there was a note about personal items in with the will, doesn't necessarily have to be attached to it, but so, just the person wrote down these items are going to go to who and signed and dated, that's normally fine. And if it's a date after that signed, and if he's and if he's of sound mind, you know, which means that if there's a will, the court's got to go to probate. I mean, it's got to go to probate normally, and they've got to determine whether he's in the right mind to make these things at this time.
Right. Now, how many how many copies of things are made? Like, if you have a client, I mean, so I guess you keep something, and then would like their attorney keep something, and then you give them a copy, and then of course they can.
How
does that
work?
Yeah,
I mean, what we what normally happens, or what should happen, is that the client has the documents drawn by an attorney, saying whatever they want to say. And like with this, with our attorney, they put together a little binder,
mm-hmm.
and actually they have suggest to the clients that they take this binder and keep it in their library on one of their shelves, so that the originals are there, and keep copies of those estate planning documents in their, oh, I don't know, safe deposit box or somewhere else, or in their safe in their house. But the problem and the reason they suggest that is because someone dies, there's always a lot of course, emotion and confusion and so forth. And trying to search and find documents is a tedious process in some situations. But if that document is right there, mm-hmm. where people can see it, estate planning of so-and-so, whatever it says, they can go right to it, and it saves a lot of aggravation and time. That's what our attorneys like to see people do.
Gotcha.
And not put the original documents in a safe deposit box. Some people think that they should, but the problem with that is what happens when someone dies, and the institution hears about it or finds out, I am told that they lock the safe deposit boxes. Well, how are you going to get into it if they lock it, if they find out?
Sure.
You know, so I mean, you could add another person on it, but we've had situations where there's just the decedent, even though he's married and the wife couldn't get at it. It's just things that people do for reasons that God only knows.
Right.
And that's why you have an estate planning attorney.
Exactly.
Does this stuff. They know what to do. And if they make a mistake, as I tell my clients, if they make a mistake, they have errors and omissions
mm-hmm.
insurance. All right? The documents you got off the internet for Colorado or down at the Office Depot place,
yeah, right.
They don't have any, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we like to make sure that estate planning documents are there where everybody can see them and find them. And then in those documents, they have an initial little tag or page that says, if something happens, call this person. Call David Cishan. Call Mr. XYZ attorney
right.
at this number, you know, and be done with it. Because there's so much to do. And one of these shows that we'll do is what should be done when someone dies.
Yes, sir.
I think that's a good one to do. There's a lot of things, but I want to tell you, the people that have done them and got them in place makes life real easy.
Yes, sir. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, we hear every day when we watch the news, or if you still pick up a newspaper, you'll see things where, you know, tragically, you know, maybe a husband or wife was killed or whatever, or sometimes both of them, and then the family knows absolutely nothing in that case. So, yeah, while it's a terrible topic to talk about, it's reality, and, you know, and it's something that everyone can get help with for sure. Again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Educated Investor Show with David Cishan, brought to you by the Householder Group. They are estate and retirement specialist, and their number is 720-482-1917. So, David, as far as, you know, kind of reviewing people's plans mm-hmm. and stuff, I mean, what are mm-hmm. a couple of the events in life that you would say, you know, hey, it's time to bring your plan in and, you know, let us just give you that second opinion if you weren't the ones that originally drew it up. But even if you were the ones that drew it up, what are some of those life events that happen to just to make sure their plan is up to date all the time?
Well, you know, again, the documents, the will, for example, in Colorado is, you know, like most states, it's state-run wills. The rules and regulations are by the state and how the will has to be prepared and so forth. And so a lot of people will come in with a will, but they've done what most people do. They've got that will. They stuck it in a drawer. Now, 21 years later, they found it, and they said, geez, maybe we ought to update, because you could have the birth of a child. You could you could kind of disinherit one, perhaps, that you didn't want to. So the birth of a child is an important event. Maybe the purchase of a house is an important event, or property, other types of property. Maybe the executor or personal representative that you have in your will moved out of the state, or moved out of the country, or passed away, or got ill and sick and is not able to help and do the things that they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Things like my son, who is supposed to take over this business and show financial responsibility, is off traveling around in Europe with two or three blondes and brunettes on the back of his motorcycle and spending every dollar we're sending him.
Right.
I mean, there's any number of issues. And the kids are old enough. I mean, they're over 18 or 21.
Sure.
They don't need a guardian that you've named in there, you know? There are so many different situations. What we recommend people to do is, once they have it done, and maybe, you know, it's the will, of course, but it's also the ancillary documents that go with the will. The financial power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
The medical power of attorney. You've appointed someone. Maybe that someone isn't capable anymore of doing that. May not be in the will. It may be in these ancillary documents.
Right.
Or you might change your living will, which is your right to die. We had one couple. Well, this is 2 months ago, but came in and his will was very specific because of a prior marriage. And the prior marriage, his wife died a number of years ago, and she was a very big lover of the Rocky Mountains. So her ashes were spread over the Rocky Mountains. This guy died, and his current spouse found the document, and they had talked about this, but found the document, and indeed in the document he expressed his concern. He wanted to join his prior wife in the Rocky Mountains, so they got the airplane out there, and they dispersed his ashes out there. But without communicating that, without knowing about that, this lady could have just had a normal funeral.
Sure.
And didn't go along with the will before the will was even probated. You know, I mean, there are things that can happen, because these wills and ancillary documents are all state-run.
Sure.
And by the time someone dies and it goes to probate, you know, it can take some time before the will gets to probate, especially if they can't find it right away. and you may not know what his intentions are or hers.
Yeah.
Upon the death.
Man.
It's really, I've seen it all. I mean, I could
Boy,
go on
no
for
doubt.
Hours.
Yeah, no doubt. And folks, hey, as David said three or four times throughout this show today, all of the negative aspects that we've talked about are 100% avoidable, okay? But you've got to make the first call. 720-482-1917 is the number. You can check out the website, cichonfinancialservices.com. That's C-I-C-H-O-N, financialservices.com. And when you call, just let them know you heard David here on The Educated Investor. David, as always, our time goes so quick, but we appreciate your time and hope you have a great week, sir.
Yeah, you have a great week, and we'll see you again soon.
All right, sir. That is David Cichon. Once again, Cichon Financial, 720-482-1917. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Chris Kane with 303roofer.com. If you're looking to put on a new roof because of hail, give us a call at 303-390-1382. We'll give you a cash price, which means you'll most likely get to keep some of your insurance money instead of giving it to us. It's your money, we know that, and we'll price the work accordingly. So give us a call today, 303-390-1382, or go to our website, 303roofer.com.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager All-in-One Loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
KLZ's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, has a unique background that makes him a more effective advocate for you. He handles both criminal and civil cases. Most attorneys only do one or the other, but Kevin has almost 25 years of experience on both sides, which means he has more practice in the courtroom. Most personal injury attorneys will say they have experience in court, but since only about 10% of personal injury cases actually go to trial, those attorneys only appear in court once or twice a year. Because Kevin also takes criminal cases, he appears in court constantly. Kevin has a rare ability to present an argument that only comes from years of experience learning how to read a courtroom. KLZ's personal injury attorney continues to practice both civil and criminal defense because he believes the courtroom keeps him nimble. Trial tested, trial ready. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886.
Now's the time to get into the Outdoorsman's Attic. It's truly a wall-to-wall sale. Sitka gear 25% off. All clothing, fishing gear, and packs 30% off. You'll find many items 30 to 50% off retail.
great deals on previously owned outdoor gear for the fisherman, camper, hiker, or hunter in your family, or bring in your gear to the Outdoorsman's Attic and turn it into cash. And if you're looking for a great handgun, rifle, or shotgun, get by the Outdoorsman's Attic. If your firearm needs a little work, see Scott the Gunsmith and tell him Scott at Sportsman of Colorado Radio sent you. All at the Outdoorsman's Attic. Great service, great bargains, great gear. 2650 West Hampton.
This is 560 KLZ, your home station.
Welcome to Your Health Matters, sponsored by Integrated Health Systems. Traditional medicine has left you frustrated. You've seen doctor after doctor searching for answers, only to feel more confused than ever. Chiropractic neurologist Dr. Shane Stedman, along with his team at Integrated Health Systems, does the detective work you need to identify causes, not just treat your symptoms. Using a team approach to combine functional medicine with neurology, Integrated Health Systems spends the necessary time with each client to find out what's really going on. Thanks to Dr. Stedman and his team, many clients who struggle with debilitating health issues have finally found relief. Now, Haystack Help Radio proudly presents Your Health Matters.
Welcome to Your Health Matters, as mentioned, brought to you by Integrated Health Systems. Each week, a member of the team joins us, and today we are glad to welcome Dr. Perry Maynard. Dr. Maynard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. It's a beautiful day. So,
it absolutely is.
I'm doing well.
It sure is, for sure. Well, I tell you, you and I were kind of discussing before we came on air here, and boy, this is something that I think really affects every listener and every person, and that is just this whole idea of energy or lack thereof, and I guess a medical term would be chronic, and just kind of talk about that today, and kind of the term chronic fatigue, and so maybe just to kind of explain what that is from a medical side, and then we'll get into the topic here a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's important because there can be a lot of nuance in that. You know, you can have what's called true chronic fatigue syndrome, which we can talk about in a second, of where there's a lot of different kind of boxes you have to check to really get that diagnosis. But right, there's people all along the spectrum. So, you know, in traditional healthcare, we love to say someone has, you know, a specific medical diagnosis, and if you don't fit all those boxes, well, then you're okay, right? So there's a lot of gray area, and then there's also true chronic fatigue. But really, these are the individuals that we're discussing. You know, when you look at fatigue, you know, these may be the individuals where they have a really hard time getting out of bed, right? They maybe they slept for 10, 12 hours, and they're still exhausted in the morning. Or maybe they're okay in the morning, but man, by 2 o'clock, they are just white, you know? Or when they, you know, maybe they go to work out, working out actually makes them worse. You know, so for a lot of individuals, sometimes working out will bring them to life and make them feel better. And a lot of times in fatigue patients, sometimes that can make them even worse. And when that happens, that can tell us a little bit about mechanisms of what may be going on.
Right.
And then sometimes there's the individuals who are literally fatigued 24/7. I mean, these are some patients where they may not be able to get out of bed. They can't even walk to the mailbox. You know, I have a patient right now, you know, who walks to the bathroom, and for a while it was just debilitating fatigue, right? So it can kind of be along that whole spectrum of individuals, right? Because all of us can experience some sort of fatigue, you know, but not all of us are technically chronic fatiguers. But it's important because there could be so many different things, which I think we'll get into in a little bit, of what could be all the things really contributing to fatigue, or what really is it at the root of its problem.
Sure. And, you know, when it comes to just the matter of sleep real quick, I mean, you know, I think we've all met the people, you know, a guy goes, oh, I can sleep 5 hours a day and I'm good, you know. Well, other people need 9 hours. I mean, even though somebody thinks they may be getting by on 5-6 hours, they're probably not really, they might be living a little bit, but they're not living their optimal self, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I think one way of looking at that is, yeah, some people think they're doing okay, but also what's funny is some people start to feel well again, and then they look back and they're like, wow, I thought I felt good, but wow, I really felt crummy all the time. So sometimes if someone's eating bad, they're not sleeping right, and they're like, well, I feel fine. Well, but could they feel better, right? So there's that's one piece. There's another piece where, some people can get away with things for a certain period of time, but those things will catch up, right? We know that sleep is so foundational. The root of the parts of cells where chronic fatigue really comes from. So in a sec, we'll kind of chat about that, but you have these parts of your cells called your mitochondria, and those are what produce energy. And we know that they're very sensitive to lack of sleep or changes in sleep rhythm. And when you see individuals who may be able to get away with 5 hours of sleep, it may be because they're not dealing with other aspects. What I mean by that is that if you have someone who maybe is not eating well, they have a ton of stress in their life, they have chronic infections, and they don't sleep well, that person just may fall apart easier versus maybe there's another person that genetically everything is great, and so they can handle it. Think of it kind of like a bulletproof vest.
Sure.
And maybe you can take one bullet or two bullets to it, but when you start getting 10 to 15 bullets, it starts to break down. It can no longer be protective. And that's the thing where maybe you can get away with sleeping 5 hours, but it will eventually break things down. Or let's say you're sleeping 5 hours a day and then, God forbid, something happens stressful in your life. That could be the catalyst that then sets things off. So everything builds on each other. You know, so we have to try to be doing everything right so that we can handle this crazy roller coaster called life, because we never know when life will hit us with a curveball.
Sure.
And we better hope that our body is ready to handle it. And this is, I think, where we see our patients, where they think things are okay, and then unfortunately they suffer a loss in the family, or they lose their job, or divorce, or they get ill, and then everything comes crumbling down. Most likely there were things going on and patterns going on that weren't serving them, and it just was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right. Dr. Perry Maynard is our guest. You're listening to Your Health Matters, once again brought to you by Integrated Health Systems. So when we talk about this whole idea of chronic fatigue, I think most of us think of people, you know, hey, 40 plus in age, but are there times you may see this in some folks that'll be younger as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen it in teenagers, and I've seen it in even kids not in their teens. I definitely say it's more common to see in older and middle-aged individuals, but I have definitely seen individuals that are 12, 15, 16, or in their 20s with debilitating fatigue. You know, we tend to see chronic fatigue syndrome affect females far more frequently than males. But yeah, you can definitely see it in younger age. I think you tend to see it in older individuals because there is a component of, for the most part, when we're younger, these systems are more durable. And then life has a way of kind of wearing us down. So I think time can play a role, but you can see it in, I think, especially now where you're seeing that the food is more toxic, our environment is more toxic from a chemical standpoint, but also psychologically, I think that's where you're seeing kids develop these things earlier. It's just the world is a different place to live in than it was maybe 30 or 40 years ago.
Right. Okay. All right. So let's kind of walk through some of the symptoms where you might say, okay, everyone listening, if you're experiencing this, this, or this, you probably have chronic fatigue.
Definitely. So some of the different things could be not waking up feeling well-rested. So waking up feeling tired and then not being able to go to bed. So this is a very common thing you see where they're very fatigued in the morning and then all of a sudden wide awake at night. You can sometimes see it associated with things like depression and anxiety. Brain fog can be another very common symptom of chronic fatigue. When exercise causes individuals to become very fatigued either during it or after, or individuals who become very, very sore and they can't recover from a workout. So maybe they do a light jog and it takes them a week to recover, or maybe even it takes a few days to recover. So you have to look and say, huh, that wasn't that much exercise. Why am I taking so long to recover? Those are some of, I think, the most common things that I see. I mean, you can even see it where one of, I think, the earliest signs that I see is where individuals start fatiguing maybe at work quicker. So maybe they're good in the morning, but by the afternoon they have brain fog,
mm-hmm.
or they have a headache, or they get off of work and they just feel like they need to take a nap. Those are very early signs that the endurance in your brain and your body are starting to fatigue, right? And those are what you start to see well before people start to get debilitating fatigue. So I'd say that's probably one of the biggest, those are probably some of the biggest symptoms I notice on a daily basis with patients.
Right. Are there some things that you have found out, you know, with the practice of keys to helping people, you know, even the last thing maybe they do hour or so before bed? I mean, you know, even trying working out, and I know you're very familiar with the exercise and all from your athletic days. Not that you're not now, but you know, it used to be. But, you know, everybody says, hey, working out in the morning is the best for your body. Some people, you know, I see in the passing by a gym, I'll see people, the parking lot's full. I mean, what if somebody did something at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, you know, and did, you know, a good brisk walk or run or something? Would that help them sleep? I mean, are there better times to work out that might help this feeling?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, when it comes to, like, chronic fatigue patients, any exercise is good exercise. You know, it's like I kind of have a saying, and it's funny, one of my jiu-jitsu professors had said this one time. He's like, when's the best? Someone asked him about training. He's like, the best time to train is when you can show up. You know, and honestly, because you can get into the nuance of where, you know, if you're, you know, fatigue aside, if you're trying to, we'll do some kind of simple known things. We know that things like testosterone and anabolic hormones peak later in the afternoon. So you can make an argument that strength training can be more productive in the later afternoon. We know that morning in a fasted state, cardio can be very, very effective from a standpoint of weight loss. Now, when it comes to someone with fatigue, I don't think it's as necessary to get into that nuance. We just have to get them moving. So really, any time is a good time, because one of the problems with chronic fatigue is that their mitochondria, or the cells that produce ATP or energy, are not efficient in producing energy. So exercise can be one of the most powerful things in, one, increasing the amount of mitochondria, so increasing the amount of banks that can loan you energy,
mm-hmm.
And then increasing the efficiency of those energy systems. So really, early on, it's about moving and just getting the heart rate up. I mean, really, I really like what's called kind of like zone 2 training for a lot of chronic fatigue patients, which is kind of training in the ideal aerobic zone, so an area where they can utilize oxygen. So going back with chronic fatigue is they have issues in being able to utilize oxygen to create energy. So we want to use different types of training where that really amplifies one's ability to utilize oxygen. So I really like aerobic training or zone 2 training with chronic fatigue patients, because it's a little bit easier on the body, easier to do, and it's utilizing the energy systems that seem to be an issue in chronic fatigue. But from mm-hmm. a standpoint of time of day, honestly, the time where you can get to the gym or you can get to the track or you can get is that's the best time, whether that's 5:30 in the morning, whether that's nighttime. Now, of course, we don't want to be doing a really intense workout right before bed, because that can keep us up.
Sure.
But at the beginning, any time that you can get moving is the right time.
Okay, great. Now, would it help every once in a while, just to stay on the topic of working out a little bit, would it help, like, for several weeks maybe to do a morning, and then if you can, do it then for a few weeks in an afternoon, just to kind of shake your body up and change your metabolism a little bit? Or would you not see any benefit to that?
So actually, I may argue possibly the opposite when it comes to chronic fatigue. So one of the first things we have to do with chronic fatigue patients, or one of the biggest issues, is a loss of what's called a circadian rhythm or a circadian clock.
Okay.
So within our bodies all work off this 24-hour clock, okay? And all of them, all our sleep-wake cycles, everything follows our sleep-wake cycle. So our liver, our heart, our digestive tract, our brain, right? That's why night shift workers are at such a higher risk for disease processes. So honestly, so that I think could be something that could be helpful later on. Honestly, what we want to do early on is we want to set rhythms. We want to say, this is daytime, this is nighttime. You eat at this time, you go to sleep at this time. And then we can use workout at certain times to trigger the same thing. So honestly, actually, I like to create routines and mm-hmm. rhythms and get everything in sync at first. Down the road, I don't think that that's a bad idea, right? Because stress or stressing the body can be a very good thing to cause it to adapt. So, but I think early on, creating a rhythm, because if you wake up every morning at 5:30 and you go for a 30-minute walk, that's actually going to be, and you keep that consistent, that's actually going to be very helpful in making it to where it's easier for you to wake up at 5:30 every morning versus if you wake up at 5:30 twice a week and then at 7, 3 times a week, your rhythms are going to be all off, right? Your brain's going to perceive as if you have jet lag. So those internal clocks are very, very sensitive. So I actually like rhythms and consistency a little bit better
right.
than a majority of my patients.
Okay, great. Once again, Dr. Perry Maynard is our guest. Your Health Matters is the company. 303-781-5617 is the number. All right, let's talk. Now, the proper diagnosis is key. And that's one thing you guys really, really do well at Integrated Health Systems. So do people come in and you can just tell from the initial consult, this is their problem? Or do you, does this usually come up somewhere in the conversation of other issues you're addressing? And how do you get to that proper diagnosis, I guess is my question.
Yeah, so it definitely is pretty easy to tell if someone is fatigued, throughout the examination. Really the big key is why. That's the hard part. That's where we really need to work things up, because there could be so many different things. There could be things from, once again, dysregulated sleep to dysregulated blood sugar. So maybe they're diabetic or they have low blood sugar. Hormones can play a role. Chemical exposures or toxins, things like mold, or one of the biggest things, the two biggest things that you can see with chronic fatigue is chronic infections, especially viral infections, and then underlying autoimmune conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Very commonly when we see individuals who are fatigued and they're like, I've done everything correct, I eat well, I sleep well, I try to do everything I can, a lot of times there's either a underlying autoimmune disease under the surface that has not been detected, a chronic viral infection that has not been detected, or exposure to toxins that are just very damaging to the body, right? And also, we can't forget medication. A lot of medications, statins be an example, statins are well-known medications that can damage your mitochondria. So they can literally affect your ability to produce energy. So we also can't forget that sometimes medications that people are on to help with other conditions can be causing their fatigue. So that's where we really use a very thorough workup of history, and we dive into history all the way from a kid to present state, workups they've had. We go into medication, supplement, everything they've tried that has helped and hasn't helped, and then we go into the examination, and then that allows me to then direct into how do I create more specific tailored testing, blood work testing, to dive in to really be able to figure out what is the root of their chronic fatigue? Because if we can find that, then we can find a tailored treatment that is specific to their fatigue mechanism, and that gives us a much better likelihood of having a positive outcome.
Okay, great. And, things were hard a couple of years ago, but when you take what we've all been through this last couple of years, add it on to just life, I'm sure you guys have seen the stress levels very high with patients coming in now, right?
Oh, yeah. We've seen a lot. It's unfortunate. We've seen a lot of depression and anxiety skyrocket. Unfortunately, a lot of suicide. You know, there's been a lot of stress these past 2 years. And I'd say from my time in practice, if I've seen one thing that is the most underrated issue is stress. Mm-hmm. And individuals not realizing the stress that they have, that they're carrying.
Wow. Now, how much would our nutrition, it seems like every time I talk to you guys, and Lindsay as well, nutritionists there, everything somehow always comes back to what we're eating. How much does our diet play a role in this condition we're calling chronic fatigue?
So it plays a massive amount. If you think about it, right, by definition, or shouldn't say by definition, but chronic fatigue is an inability to produce energy. So we get our energy from intake of different foods. So we know with chronic fatigue patients, their mitochondria's ability to use food for fuel is not very good. So diet is a huge, huge key. So the foods we eat, the types of foods we eat, when we eat them, all can play a huge role in leading us to a point of chronic fatigue or helping us to get out of a state of chronic fatigue. So diet is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, Dr. Perry Maynard is our guest. Your Health Matters is our show. And Integrated Health Systems is who you need to call. 303-781-5617. It is a free consult. Just mention you heard the show here. Last couple minutes here, Dr. Maynard, but let's just kind of take a minute, and I like to do this when different partners are on, kind of just talk about your main role and kind of the type of patients that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, definitely. So I work a lot with individuals who have suffered concussions or traumatic brain injuries. Anyone suffering from any sort of possible neurological ailment, that could be dizziness, that could be balance issues, that could be a stroke or concussion, things like that. I think that's a big bulk of mine. And then on top of that, individuals suffering from autoimmune conditions and then things like chronic fatigue are kind of the main things that I work with. Honestly, I always tell people it's like the house, if you've ever seen that show House, of funky neurological conditions. Minus, I wouldn't say I'm out there as whoever that doctor is. He's a little eccentric on that show, but we see kind of the weird of the weird when it comes to neurological conditions and just health conditions in general.
Sure. You know, it won't be long, people will be hitting the ski slopes, and I never really thought about this till just right this second, but do you guys see more with concussions and different things like that once the ski season starts?
Yeah, unfortunately. We see quite a bit of head injuries that occurred from ski accidents, which is always difficult for me because I'm an avid skier and snowboarder, have been since I was a little kid. It's a big passion of mine, but it is hard sometimes doing the line of work I do. And then, so we definitely see an uptick for sure. Or what we'll see a lot of times is an uptick in the summer because individuals suffered a head injury and they tried to get better on their own. And it happened in the winter, and then they end up rolling in the spring or the summer. So the key is get help as quick as you can. Don't wait. If things have not improved within 2 weeks, you need to be seeing somebody to get the help you need so that you don't end up in our office 6 months to a year later in even worse shape.
Sure. You know, and not trying to put you on the spot here, but any idea of how to recommend people? Because I'm sure there's like all these different types of helmets for, you know, at all different prices and all. Can you give any advice on what people should look for? You know, snowboarding, all that kind of stuff. I mean, when they're purchasing a helmet, anything to look for or brands?
That's actually a great question. And I can't say that I have necessarily a great specific answer. I mean, you definitely want to get, I can't think off the name, but there are ones that have specific certifications. So, I mean, any of the big name brand helmets are going to be good because they're going to have to go through a specific certification. You know, there was an interesting helmet that I'd seen, and I don't know a ton about it, but it was kind of fascinating because it had two different shells, and then one of the surface ones actually would kind of move, so it helped to dissipate the energy of the impact. But, you know, I don't know if there's a huge, huge difference mm-hmm. between brands or things like that with ski helmets.
Main thing is wear one, right?
The main thing is start with wearing one. Yeah. And honestly, pay attention to others. I think one of the most dangerous things on the mountain are other people. It's no different than driving. You know, my dad used to always harp on me about defensive driving and being aware that other people are most likely the ones to cause issues. I think it's the same thing skiing. You know, have a good time. Maybe if you're going to have a few adult beverages, be careful.
Sure.
Don't be drinking too much on the slopes. That's where I think you see people get into trouble. But wear a helmet. That's the biggest thing, is wear a helmet and watch out for others.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Maynard, as always, we appreciate your time, and thank you so much for helping us out. And we'll look forward to our conversation next time around. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Scott.
All right. That's Dr. Perry Maynard. Again, you've been listening to Your Health Matters, Integrated Health Systems. And as I mentioned, it is a free consultation. So give them a call, 303-781-5617. Let them know you heard them here on the show. And I promise you, they'll take great care of you. Thanks for joining us today for Your Health Matters.
Call Integrated Health Systems now for a free consultation, 303-781-5617. That's 303-781-5617. To book your consultation online, visit integratedhealthdenver.com. Thank you for listening to Your Health Matters. Be sure to join Dr. Shane Steadman live every Monday at 12:30 p.m. on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.